Hey everybody, this is Dominique, and if you're ready to do more with your life and money, I want you to stay tuned. Today we are going to look at three overlooked ways to boost portfolio returns. There was a lot of market volatility in February, and so therefore I want to give you some tried and true ways to where you can boost your portfolio returns regardless of what the market does. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of feeling like there's more to life that you're just not experiencing? Are you unmotivated by keeping up with the status quo? Are you ready to start living intentionally with your finances and creating the life you want? Get ready for Experiencing Financial Contentment with Dominique Henderson, a podcast focused on helping you create margin for the life you want to live by putting your money where your heart is. Each week, Dominique will help you explore the decisions you make around money so that you can achieve better results. Now here's your host, Dominique Henderson.
Hello everybody, this is Dominique, owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, where we are helping our clients achieve their ideal financial outcome, and host of Experiencing Financial Contentment, the podcast. So welcome back, all our regular listeners, and welcome to our guest, our first time guest for listening. I'll tell you what this podcast is all about. It's all about financial literacy. It's all about economic empowerment. It's about helping you do more with your life and money, helping you develop on a personal level, making you become one with your money. There's so many different things vying for our attention, and to have a laser focus on your why, the reason for living, and what you value and believe, and using your money to push that forward is the key to financial contentment, at least in my opinion. So that's what we talk about on this podcast. Today, we are going to be covering something that I think is crucial for you if you have investments, which hopefully you do. At some point, you're going to need that money to support a future lifestyle once your paycheck stops. So we're going to talk about three overlooked, but what I feel are simple ways to boost portfolio returns. Portfolio returns come in two flavors, right? The first flavor is your gross return, right? What did you end up with at the end of the year divided by what you started with? Subtract one, multiply by 100, that's your percent return. That's your gross, right? But then what eats into that? You got taxes, you got fees, you got all that kind of different kind of stuff that basically gives you your net return, which is what you can actually spend, by the way. And so how do you decrease the margin between gross and net? Well, I got three simple, like I said, overlooked, easy ways that you can do that. Just after doing this for so long, I've seen the clients that I've worked with over my period of time employ these things and basically boost their net returns over time. So I'm going to share those with you. Yeah, we'll wind it up after that, and that should be it. Because I think where this comes into play, and the reason why I was thinking about this is because if you have a, let's say your retirement date is summer 2018, this last February was probably pretty scary for you. I mean, you had two 1,000-point drops on the Dow, and I don't know, you know, people may be thinking, even if your retirement date is not 2018, summer 2018, you may be thinking, we might have a prolonged tumble. I mean, this market is, you know, bound for correction. A lot of people are saying that. So what could you employ? What could you implement into your portfolio that regardless of what the market does, these are things that'll boost your return, your net return over time? That's what I'm going to give you today. So let's pull the screen over, as I sometimes like to do. And we got the three out there. So what I'm just going to do is just walk through them with some examples. And like I said, hopefully all this stuff you can start employing. All this stuff you can do yourself, by the way. You don't have to. This is not really hard. These are things that you can ask your broker about. Even if you have like a TD or Ameritrade or something like that, an E-Trade account, you can do all this yourself. So this is really easy, simple, low-hanging fruit, like I said, to do. All right, so the first thing is deducting your investment management fees. Fees for managing your assets are deductible per the IRS Publication 550, right? So they kind of consider you with an investment portfolio as managing property, and anything that in the line of managing that property is a deductible expense. So this is how this works. So let's say you have $1 million that's being managed. And that at 1%, which is pretty typical, that's $10,000 a year. Okay. So as long as your AGI, As long as the fees of your management, to the extent they exceed 2% of your AGI, they can be deducted, right? So let's walk through an example here. Let's say that everything that comes in, so let's make sure you understand AGI. So everything that comes into you as income, as W-2, rental income, all that kind of stuff, that's all sources of income. From wherever it comes, whether it be your investment account or whatever, that is your gross. Then you'll deduct what are called above the line expenses, above the line deductions. I'm sorry. So that would be things like, you know, contributions to your 401k, deferred comp, HSA contributions, all that kind of IRA deductions. If you're able to deduct an IRA based on your income. After you deduct all that, moving expenses, yada, 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 all that stuff basically will get to a number that is your adjusted gross income, your AGI. So for in the example that I just gave you, $1 million portfolio being charged 1% is $10,000 a year. As long as you didn't make over $500,000 last year, you can deduct all of that. Okay, because 2% of $500,000 is 10. All right. So that's and to have your fees, your investment management fees deducted, the way you would do that in a couple of instances, because a lot of people might have retirement money that is that size or cost that much to manage. What you would do is two ways you could do this. You could either deduct your fees from another account, or you can just pay it in cash. Right. So let's do the second way first. Like, so if you wrote a check or paid via credit card your management fees and didn't have them deducted from the IRA, because you can't deduct fees from the IRA account per IRS stuff too. So you would write a check to your broker or your fiduciary, your advisor, whatever, and you can deduct that fee, that expense. Or if you had another account there, like a joint account or an individual account or a trust or something like that, have the fees billed for managing your IRA, have them billed to that other account, and then deduct the fees in aggregate there. IRS does not really differentiate between account 1, 2, 3, you know, and type. They just look at you as one economic unit. So you can do that, and that's fair and square right there. So that's one way you can boost your portfolio returns and increase that net return that we talked about at the top of this podcast over time, right? So deducting your investment management fees. Deferring taxes. It seems like a no-brainer, but let's talk about how to do that, because you should look at this as inflows and outflows. So money coming in, your salary and all this other kind of stuff, you need to be putting a significant portion in your 401k, at least maxing out the IRS maximum for each year, depending on the type of retirement account you have, because you don't pay taxes on this money and you get to let it compound for a very long time before you have to pay taxes. So use all the vehicles out there that are available for that to be used or available for you to utilize that tax deferral method or tax free. I mean, in some cases, you know, you have stuff like the HSA where you can put pre-tax contributions in there and you do not have to pay taxes on them as long pay taxes on the gains or that money as long as you withdraw it for medical expenses. So that's the HSA. But there's tons of vehicles like that. And you just got to utilize those, because the lower that you can make your current tax so that the money that you have invested is compounding at a greater rate, then you're golden. So that's inflows. Outflows would be things like selling your gains too early. All right, so there's short-term gains and there's long-term gains. Short-term gains are anything that you hold within 12 months, inside of 12 months. And long-term gains are obviously the opposite of that, so anything outside of 12 months. And the difference, especially let's say if you're in the 28 to 35% tax bracket or higher, then if you sell something that was bought at 5 and goes up to 10, that $5, you got to pay upwards of 30% taxes on that, because short-term gains are taxed at your ordinary rates. So that's the reason why the one year plus one day is a good rule, because the short-term versus long-term rates are so different, and you want to utilize that. So that's the way I say defer taxes. There's this saying that's not mine, but it's investing is not about, it's not all about what you make. It's about what you keep. And that's the whole notion behind this gross return and this net return that we were talking about. You've got to be able to be smart about this, which is the reason why one of the pillars of financial planning is tax planning. You've got to do it. If you make a big pile of money and then you have to give it away at the end of the year, or you have to write this big, huge check that that dips into your margin for living, for current lifestyle support, then that's kind of backwards. So you got a tax plan along the year so that you reduce the liability to within the parameters of the law, but you're utilizing all the things that are out there to help you reduce that liability, if that makes sense. All right. Last but not least, use the power of compounding interest. Okay. So you got to understand, I think, the three components of total return, first of all. So how does your portfolio generate return? How does your $1 grow to $5 or $1.50? How does that happen? Well, it's composed of three different things. The first is the change in price, right? So we talked about that before. You buy at 5, it goes up to 10. That's a change in price. It's pretty unpredictable. The direction of asset prices generally go up, but I mean, we've had a lot of empirical evidence to show that sometimes they go down. So when do they go down? Why do they go down? And how much do they go down? Who knows? Let's concentrate on the last two components of this because they're the most predictable, the most reliable. The first is income. You can buy assets that are through documents, they're contractually the payor that is paying you the dividend, or the borrower that is paying you interest when you lend them money. In a lot of assets, they're contractually obligated, legally obligated to pay you, and you have recourse if they don't. So you need to find those type of assets. That's another discussion. We'll probably hit that on another podcast. But the point is that's a reliable source of income. It's almost kind of like your paycheck at your job. You go there, you show up, and you work, and on the 15th and the 30th, you get paid. So that's how some assets work. And if you can find those assets and put those in the portfolio, that second component of total return, income, becomes relatively reliable as it relates to the first one that we talked about, which is growth or change in price. And then the third one, which is become even more reliable depending on the type of person you are, which is the interest on the income, right? So you can control those last two, which is 2/3 of your portfolio return, which to me, that's a lot of control that you have. And you can really shift your portfolio strategy and your investment strategy to center on finding assets that meet those last two criteria versus chasing after growth, which is sexy and salacious, and I get it, and you can talk about it at dinner parties and on the golf course, but at the end of the day, nobody knows the direction of prices, right? So here we go. How does this work? Really through a DRIP program, a dividend reinvestment program, how you would do this. So let's say you have an account at E-Trade, right? And you own 100 shares that you bought at 20. And that price of 20 is where you bought it at. And let's say that the stock pays we're going to use a stock, this is really easy, pays a $1 dividend. So what you have is a 5% dividend yield, cash flow to you that is not necessarily promised in this case of a stock, but, you know, you can look at the history of it and see how long they've been paying dividends. So that's what's coming into you. So whenever a dollar dividend is paid to you, essentially you can buy 1/20th of a share at the share price of 20, right? But what if we had the market volatility that we had at the beginning of February and the price went down to 10? Well, what does $1 of dividend buy then? It buys 1/10th of a share, which is a 10% yield, which is a pay raise. And then you can take that 1/10th of a share that you bought that also gets a $1 dividend and buy another and another and another. And this is how the power of compounding interest works, that over time you end up getting this big pile of money. And the interest in the income off of that over all that time. And this is what I've seen really disciplined investors do, is they put their, so there's a couple ways you do this. So you can do the DRIP program. And then even with the custodian I have, once you buy a share, once it settles and it's in your account, you can go in and you can toggle it. You can say, I want the dividend paid in cash to me, and it flows right back into the money market. or you can have it automatically be reinvested as soon as it's paid. So that's the discipline that you need to do. These are things that you can do on your own. This is not rocket science here. You can employ a compounding interest discipline into your account. You can employ deferring taxes. You can employ deducting investment management fees. These are all things that will boost your return over time and help that net return get closer to your gross return. By definition, the gross return will never be achieved because of fees and taxes and things like that. But you can definitely decrease the margin between those two, or the space between those two. So hopefully that's helpful. What we'll do here, we'll switch back over. And if you have more questions, there's a couple ways to get in contact with me. First of all, you could send me an email at feedback@djhendersonsr.com. That comes directly in my inbox, and we'll answer questions about the podcast or anything that we talked about. You can also join the Creating Financial Contentment free Facebook group that I basically have. It's the podcast extended. It is a group of individuals that are like-minded. They're on this same path of finding financial contentment. They're trying to do more with their money, more with their life. They're trying to have an upgrade in life, go from 1.0 to 2.0. So we talk about all those things. We talk about financial literacy. We talk about economic empowerment. We talk about personal development. We're trying to motivate a way of life that is going to be more fulfilling. So that is my open invitation to you. We'd love to see you there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll see you back next time. Take care. Bye-bye.